All right. Happy Thursday. I've had a busy week. We've had like something every night. It's I like it that way, but my goodness.
I was going to say that's kind of your jam, though, isn't it?
It's been a lot. This week was a big week for new restaurants opening. I know the restaurants that close always get the attention, but Pub 819 in Hopkins just opened Wednesday. Hippo Pockets, a new... Do you like Taco Bell? Are you a Taco Bell guy?
Very occasionally.
Yeah.
Not very regularly.
The kids love these crunch wraps.
Yes, they do.
My kids love them. And the team behind Centro created their own concept around that called Hippo Pockets. And so that's open this week. And then last night we were at Dark Horse, and tonight we're going to Woodbury. I don't go to Woodbury that often.
Oh, that's not next door to Maple Grove.
So if you guys have any hot tips about Woodbury, I'm going to a new restaurant that opens next week. It's called Liliana. Liliana. I get around, Dan.
Oh, we know.
It's... And a lot of texters are asking about the big voice guy who's introducing the traffic. What's with the new big voice dude? I don't know. Sometimes you got to freshen it up, right? I am very in favor of our bosses swapping out big voice guy because it means they're not swapping out me. If the bosses get a little anxious, a little antsy, and they want to move around the furniture, be glad they're moving around that furniture. That's sort of my view on that. Does Big Voice Guy introduce the D Rush Hour news headlines, or is it Skip?
Let's find out.
Hit the thing.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the DeRush Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
And we begin tonight with.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And our lead. By the way, that's not Big Voice Guy. It's not Skip either, but whatever. It's the old guy. We start with another federal investigation of Minnesota. Get used to it. Is this just nonstop sort of revenge for Tim Walz running against Donald Trump? Can't rule it out. The latest news in the Minnesota Star Tribune breaking just before 5 o'clock, the Department of Justice Civil Rights Office is investigating Minnesota over a diversity hiring policy. And a reminder that we are in the Trump administration, so when you're being investigated for a diversity hiring policy, that means that you're being investigated for trying to hire people of various diversity. So we know that. The concern is over a Department of Human Services policy that calls for supervisors to provide justification for hiring non-diverse candidates. So for not, I guess, if you hire a white person in an underrepresented role, you have to explain yourself. And I mean, it's typical government stuff, right, where the definition of underrepresentation is that when the full-time equivalent representation of one or more protected groups is less than that group's estimated availability. Hiring managers are required to have interviews with at least 3 underrepresented candidates if the hiring pool has 3 or more people who fall into protected groups. I will say, like, I don't like this sort of stuff. I think it's well-intended, the idea of saying we should hire in a diverse way. But the Department of Justice, although I think the motivation here is clear, I also think if this is the policy, it's kind of nuts, isn't it? If a manager's candidate pick is elevated over a more qualified applicant who falls into an underrepresented group, the supervisors are required to document objective reasons for their choice. So maybe it's minimum qualifications, maybe it's the interview score, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's that. This, I believe, is the second federal investigation of the state of Minnesota that is underway. Department The Attorney General's office, Keith Ellison, has declined to comment and said we'll defer to DHS on this, but we will see what happens. But that story just breaking. Next is that news out of the Science Museum of Minnesota. 43 people let go, a $7 million downsizing. It will be very interesting, I think, to see how people end up reacting to the fallout of a change in federal budget, but also what's happening at the Science Museum of Minnesota is that the number of people visiting, it's really dropping. It's really dropping. The museum has had three rounds of layoffs since March of 2023. Some upper management is being thinned. They had a vice president of museum experience who's retiring. That position will not be filled. But there's been between a 6 to 16% decline in museum attendance nationally since the outset of the pandemic. It is interesting because I would 0% think about museums being a victim of the fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdowns. To me, that is sort of, it's astonishing. But the reality is, when you introduce a shift into people's behavior and say, you got to stay home now, people figure out how to live their life and they forget about going out. They forget about going to museums. They find other things to do to fill their time. Attendance at the museum is down 13% this year from June 30th of 2024. Over the pandemic, they're down 30%. Sort of crazy. So part of the way they were making money in the past was our museum would create these exhibits that then would go on the road. And so other museums would pay our museum. But that, and they were making $1 to $2 million a year from that. But now, because museums are around the country are facing a budget crunch, nobody's got the money to pay our museum to send our exhibit on the road. Tough deal. Because as we know, when you cut people, you're never going to get, like, this doesn't exactly say go check out the museum. We got 40 fewer people working here. Come on down. But what do? You got to deal with the budget. You got to deal with reality. And it is a reminder, if you love our museums, go. Go. It is a shift. We have to decide if we care about this stuff and if we are going to shift our behavior again. One thing that we have found that people are doing with their time and with their money is concerts. And today the announcement was made of a show that was billed as one of the biggest events to come to Minnesota ever. Paul McCartney. His tour is called Got Back, which is weird. It's sort of a play on Get Back, but it also makes me think that, I mean, does Paul McCartney have a badonkadonk? Does he got back? Baby got back for sure. McCartney got back? Unclear. Here is Josh Lacey, the president of Live Nation Minnesota, making the announcement today.
We're about to announce a show that is sure to join the ranks, one of the most important to ever play U.S. Bank Stadium. And this artist's first appearance in Minnesota in almost a decade. As a massive music fan and member of our amazing Twin Cities concert community, today's a pinch-yourself kind of day for me. It's an honor to be here to help announce a historic concert by a truly global icon. Thank you for joining us for this special announcement this morning. I now direct your attention to the video boards.
He'll come back. It's very exciting. What time in the morning did they do this nonsense? I saw the news from Mark Fry.
I saw a video of the announcement where you could see Mark Fry setting up his equipment. So.
How exciting.
But there's a little bit more
from
Josh.
There's more?
Yeah.
All right.
Details on the show.
Is it at U.S. Bank Stadium?
Yes, it is.
That's right. On Friday, October 17th, we have the privilege of welcoming none other than Paul McCartney to U.S. Bank Stadium. Tickets go on sale Friday, July 18th at 10 a.m. Registration for artist presales starts now at paulmccartneygotback.com. Artist presales begin Tuesday, July 15th. Minneapolis is one of only 16 cities on this tour. And U.S. Bank Stadium will be one of the largest venues on the tour with only four stadium-sized performances tour-wide.
So there you go. I don't know. I think it's fun.
It's a big deal.
Next week, are you hyping this up just because we're giving away tickets, or do you really think it's a big deal?
Not just because, but it's part of it.
So next week on the show, I do think this is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Because when you have a legend, it may be the last chance to see this person. And so why wouldn't you want to see it? I do. I want to see it.
I argued in our first hour that he may be the most influential living musician on the planet right now. This is a big deal. And we're giving away tickets next week. So stay listening to the Drive Time with Rush.
Next week, every day, we'll give away two tickets playing Name That Tune. And I have a feeling they'll be Paul McCartney tunes. Is that right?
Put that all together by yourself, did
you? All right. I don't know. Do you think any other show in town has used the word badonkadonk in relation to Paul McCartney?
I sure hope not.
That is the lead. Page two is coming your way in just a minute. We're also about 15 minutes away from talking with a Star Tribune columnist about rich people. Why do we hate? Well, I think it's obvious why we hate the rich people, but we also sort of love the rich people. That'll be a good conversation with Evan Ramstead coming up in just a couple minutes. Next, though, page two, a Minnesota Democrat looking to remake the way her party runs in a community effort to save an iconic fountain in Loring Park. Man, if you're watching on the YouTube stream, it is like the check plaid design overload. Me and Cook both have like sort of similar, very different color, but the plaid is in effect.
Yeah, usually you're more colorful
than me.
What
do you call this?
I have no idea. It's like something I bought at Kohl's. That's what I call it.
It's not like gingham plaid, is it? I don't know. It's just plaid. Who cares? You should be watching on YouTube, and then you tell me.
There you go.
What this is called. First story in page two is about the future of the Democratic Party, the Democrats Party. A Minnesota Democrat wants to remake the way her party runs.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man.
This is Angie Craig in the New York Times, under the headline, "These Younger Democrats Are Sick of Their Party's Status Quo." Angie Craig, one of the leaders of this group that they're calling Majority Democrats, they have big ambitions to remake their party's image, recruit a new wave of candidates. Some believe they've been too heavy on abortion rights messaging or too heavy on anti-Trump sentiment and haven't been focusing enough on making the economy stronger. Others say that party leaders underestimate how much the school closures of the COVID era hurt trust in Democrats, or how much the reflexive defenses of the former president Joe Biden's reelection bid have hurt. They got 30 elected officials right now signed on this group. They agree that they have to better address the issues that feel most urgent in voters' lives. Angie Craig saying, if we don't build this big tent party that can win majorities, we're on the path of being the party of the permanent minority from a national election standpoint. The community coming together with an effort to save an iconic fountain in Loring Park. Minnesota Star Tribune's Eric Roper with a really nice column about the burger fountain in Loring Park. This thing is beautiful, or at least it used to be, until it went dry 5 years ago. They call it the Dandelion Fountain because the way the water kind of sprayed from all these different rods looked like a giant fluid dandelion poof. But water was leaking from the pools and the underground pipes. The park board had to turn it off. Now it just looks weird. Neighbors stepping up to revitalize it. A group called Citizens for a Loring Park Community. The quote, "This is like a healing feature for the whole city," I think. Friends of Loring Park, also a part of this. Sometimes city residents have to step up, even if, I mean, the government owns this. The city, the park board owns this. They need about $2 million, $2.6 million. $1 million is just for the fountain. They got to overhaul the vault that powers it. They have to replace the tiles that line the pools as well. These railings are stunning. They're historically accurate, and they're scary. Now, Pioneer Press reporting on the Mendota Bridge, the bike trail on that bridge closed last in 2024, replaced as part of a bridge project. And they lowered the railing to the historical height, 42 inches. Now, the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials has a minimum height standard. It is 42 inches. But 42 inches is not that many inches. If you're on a bike, looking to the right, feeling that big old truck going by on the bridge, thinking if I get blown off my bike, that sound that Dan just played is going to be me. Not what you want. On a local Facebook page, some bikers called it frightening, called it sketchy. Strong wind or a passing cyclist knocked you sideways, you can go right over. Now, is it really that dangerous? Probably not. Does it feel that dangerous? Undoubtedly. So MnDOT is going to raise it to the standard. The standard height is 54 inches, which, by the way, on the dating apps, the standard railing height says it's 6 feet tall. Cost $2.5 million. They're trying to do the right thing and make it look pretty and make it look historical. And no, no go. Top places in your life where you think like, all right, I want to get a little Botox. I want to get a little Botox. Top places you would say, I do not want to get Botox.
Daddy! I'm so happy you could be here.
How are you, baby?
Did you bring any Botox?
I didn't bring a Botox. Oh. I brought my cousin Eddie.
Nice to meet you, Eddie.
Dan Cook found this story, and I could not resist because I am a fan of doing whatever it takes to make you feel good. I think you know where I go for Botox, as I like to call it, Terine Dermatology. Where I do not go is a med spa in a shed in some 50-year-old lady's backyard. Dan, I'll give you one guess. First, I want the listeners. You have one guess as to what state this happened.
Because I already know, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it.
Well, you could pretend, but I already told people. Yeah. All right. And on the count of three, everyone say it out loud. One, two, three.
Florida.
Port St. Lucie backyard, the story from Fox 13. So in 2025, a woman goes to the police saying, I think I'm the victim of an unlicensed illegal med spa.
You think?
And I wonder what her first clue was, because on the YouTube stream, we're currently showing, this just looks like someone's backyard shed. Ladies and gentlemen, if I can give you one piece of advice, do not get anything injected into you in a backyard shed. That is the D Rush Hour News headlines in just a minute. Eat the rich, or we love the rich. I want to be rich. Our complicated relationship with the rich comes out of an absolutely shocking list of how much money CEOs in Minnesota make. That's next on Drive Time. I love rich people. I hate rich people. I think it's sort of how a lot of us feel. And Evan Bramstedt wrote about this in the Star Tribune today as the Minnesota Star Tribune published their list of CEO pay, which will, Evan, it, I mean, most people, it will make you a little sick. It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy. There's a lot of money every year. We do this. We put together the data that comes out every spring. Companies have to disclose this. The investment rules require it. And so we just, you know, many companies here in Minnesota, based here in Minnesota, and we've been doing this for many years. We just take a look at the data and rack it up.
And just put it up, right. Yeah. And, you know, these numbers always get a little complicated, right? Because
right,
you have different stock options and right, different benefits, whatever. The bottom line is we have a complicated relationship in America, in Minnesota, with CEO pay, which is sort of what you were exploring, right?
Yeah, that's so, you know, that I like to write about the trade-offs a lot when in my column, you know, on almost any issue, nothing is ever really black and white. You and I have talked about this before.
Right,
we find our way into the gray quite a lot, and so it is with the perceptions of wealth, right? Because yeah, we put the headline of something like we all want to be rich. We're also wary of the rich, you know.
Yeah,
And so there's actually a great new book out about this topic called "The Haves and the Have Yachts" by another journalist named Evan Osnos of the New Yorker. And I had just read it, and you know, this package came together, you know, at the Star Tribune, and I thought, oh, you know what, I should just put my thumb right on this duality that we all have.
Well, and we just all sort of watched with equal, well, maybe not equal amounts of fascination and disgust. The
Bezos
wedding.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean...
Which had a lot of yachts.
It had a lot of yachts.
Yeah.
And I always think about this in Minnesota, that in Minnesota, we have wealth. But when you talk to Minnesotans who have moved to L.A. or even Naples, Florida,
right.
Or New York City, our wealth is sort of adorable compared to, like, the real wealth.
Yeah, I spent...
which is all very far from what regular people are.
Right. I spent the early part of my career in Dallas. Mm. And Dallas wears its wealth very much on the sleeve in a way that really would make Minnesotans blush, you know. And I always found that so fascinating. The Dallas Morning News, for instance, had a weekly feature called Fashion Dallas. This is back in the 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, that never happened at the Minnesota Star Tribune. There was not any sort of paying of attention to the ups and downs of fashion, you know, here in Minnesota and stuff. And so, this was a place, Neiman Marcus, the big Dallas department store, didn't last very long when it came up here to the Twin Cities. Saks Fifth Avenue, less than 20 years. You know, Saks off Fifth lasted, but not the main department store.
Yeah, there's sort of a Minnesota, I find it to be a little fake, this fake modesty where you hide... You keep your fancy car in some garage in Chanhassen, and you keep your less fancy car in your driveway. But we as Americans, you cited a statistic that had a crazy amount of Americans who actually say they want to become a billionaire, which maybe gets to the heart of why we have this complex.
It's almost like equal parts wanting and revulsion. Like it was a Harris poll done last fall, and it said, I've forgotten the precise amount, but it was somewhere around 65-70% want to be billionaires. And then the almost the same precise number replied, yes, I agree to the statement, billionaires are not making America better off or something.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I
do think there is a little bit of an American dream scenario where even if you look at the rich and you say, you know, I don't know, I believe in capitalism.
I do too.
But I also am concerned that the way that capitalism is playing out today is not the way that it's supposed to play out. That the successes of our businesses and of our wealthy are not being shared because we're a service economy. We don't need to pay the employees to be able to go and buy the kitchen table that you're producing.
Right.
So you end up with this sort of screwed up system where all the money's going to Wall Street. At the same time, like, I do admire people who built these businesses and are putting their butt on the line for, so how mad can I be about it?
And I admire the people who are leading the businesses, frankly. You know, this morning, the Minnesota Business Partnership, which is the group of CEOs, had an event at Medtronic's headquarters, and they rang the opening bell for the New York Stock Exchange. And
there were
15 to 20 of our CEOs there, and it was a great opportunity to meet and chat with them informally and everything like that. And when you encounter folks like this, you realize they are there for a reason. You know, they are smart people, and they are exceptional leaders. They have certain skills that I do not possess, you may not possess. And so it's very, very rare have I met a CEO who I thought, oh, what is that guy doing? Or what is that woman doing?
Yeah.
You know, they don't really belong in that position. I mean, folks are generally in these roles because they have certain skills and gifts, you know?
This is a political debate, of course, around the country right now.
Yes.
And we especially see it playing out in New York City. But to a lesser degree, I think we see these same sort of tensions playing out here in our cities, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the way that our regular people are sending some people who identify as Democratic Socialists into our city councils. And so this isn't just an abstract debate, right? Because this debate about what we do with the rich really underlies a lot of our political discussion today.
Absolutely. And as well, I always go back ultimately to the notion of growth and the notion that we want to still have some level of economic growth, because that's how everybody gets lifted up. If you don't have any economic growth, the only way to help poor people is to take money from the wealthy people. And they're not going to allow that, basically, you know. And ultimately, that's where this starts to play out in politics, is how close do we get to that extreme?
And it's a concern here where you say, are we driving away the people who are paying the most in taxes?
Correct.
Not that we need to kiss their butt, but we also don't need to kick their butt,
no.
I think. Like, it's sort of that balance.
Right. And ultimately, I think in a way, this is a kind of a nice problem to have, because the opposite of the problem is to be in a place where you have no opportunity to become rich, mm-hmm. or you have no opportunity to shine a light on power and challenge power. And there are plenty of countries like that around the world where this tension that we're talking about, this back and forth, is actually a nice thing to have in a society.
Evan Ramstad is with us. When you look at this list that the Star Tribune put out today, you know, I think about this, and our listeners who know that I am a member of the Second Harvest Heartland Board.
Sure.
And a community conversation has been taking place in some sectors, some corners, about what is the right amount to pay a nonprofit CEO?
Right.
And it is interesting, because you do have this sort of ethical conversation. It plays out more in the nonprofit world, which, you know, personally, I think is sort of unfair. It's not like running a nonprofit means that you're taking a vow of poverty.
Nor are the challenges that much different running a nonprofit than a for-profit company. I mean, you still have all the trade-offs that you face in prioritizing costs and constraints and opportunities. And so, that's exactly right. Now, there are differences in nonprofits and for-profit companies. And one of them is the board of a for-profit company actually has is very focused on the fiduciary duty of returning investment, returning capital to the people who have provided capital, right? And
the Wall Street side of it,
the investor side of it. So that's really what a board is doing. That's really the oversight of a board of directors of a for-profit company.
Right.
Your role at a nonprofit can be much broader. You, on a board of a nonprofit, you can, we want you to be efficient, but also, hey, maybe y'all should look at this opportunity, or maybe you should be doing this. And so it is quite interesting
different.
To see what, yeah.
There was a time where there was really a movement to try to rein in CEO compensation. It feels to me, I'm curious for your take, but it feels to me like that is gone. You don't see much conversation about that anymore.
No, you really don't. I mean, it's coming. For me, as a columnist, this is actually the first time. I'm now in my third year as a columnist in the business section, and so this is the third time that I've had the opportunity to offer some commentary on our survey. And my predecessor, Lee Schaefer, did it for 9 years. And Lee and I were talking recently about, like, it was very hard for him to come up with something new to say because, you know, this conversation, as you say, has been going on for 20, 30 years. Oh, CEOs are paid so much. It's adding to inequality in the
250
country.
250-to-1 ratio between the average pay, whatever.
And then we're getting no change.
Ecolab is 327-to-1.
Right.
You know, just scrolling through some of this. XL Energy, 99-to-1.
And there's
what does this mean? I don't know, but it sounds bad.
Well, there's no real change ultimately, and it's of course from the CEOs and the board's point of view, they're all looking at their competitors and their rivals, and they're saying, well, we got to keep up. Otherwise, you know, how are we going to get the right talent? And this pervades, you know, not just at the very top, it goes down through the ranks and everything. So it's a kind of a spiral that goes on.
Yeah. It seems like, I don't know if people just got frustrated with the fact that nothing changed, and so it's not so much of an issue anymore, or what?
Well, a bit of
this
that.
This was like a shareholder activism type thing.
Right. And then they created the say on pay vote, what's called. And what happened was, a say on pay vote is where at an annual meeting, all the investors get a vote on whether the compensation to the top executives has gotten out of hand. Mm-hmm. And you never see the right. investors voting, yes, it's gotten out of hand. So there was a remedy created, and then the remedy never really produced a difference.
It is a fascinating phenomenon, uniquely American, maybe not, but definitely it lives here.
It lives here. It happens in other countries, but it doesn't. I lived in Asia for 10 years, and the scrutiny of the high pay in Hong Kong where I lived and in Seoul where I lived was there as well. But again, not really ever changing.
Evan Ramstad, a business columnist for the Minnesota Star Tribune. A really good piece today. Lots to chew on and think about. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jason.
Drive Time back in just a minute here on CCO.
Flint Hills Resources brings us the weather tonight, 69, tomorrow, 83. Chance of showers in the afternoon, evening. We'll be at Target Field live before the pitching matchup that we're excited about. Joe Ryan, Paul Skeens with the Pirates. Should be good stuff at Target Field. It's a good deal. We would love if you would subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have a very nice kind of chat group going in there, people hanging out, talking about the show. I see all of it, but you guys can chat with each other as well. It's youtube.com/WCCO Radio. Yesterday, Dan, when I stopped the show and asked people to subscribe,
yes,
we gained 20 subscribers.
How about that?
So I've only got 31 to go.
We're so close.
So 31 more subscribers.
Come on, people, you can do it.
If you're in the subscribing mood, I have a newsletter that I send out every week. It's called the DeRussia Download. You can find it on Substack, and you can sign up for that. It just shows up in your email, restaurant news. Huge list of things to do over the weekend. I've got lots of stuff going on this weekend, so you can sign up for that. Plus, we send highlights of the show. I know you guys listen to all of it. I know you don't need highlights, would you? I mean, how could you miss a day? We're on podcast platforms, too. Just search DeRussia. And off you go. Steve Thompson filling in for Henry Lake next.